This next story here on KNKX is from our show Sound Effect. Here's Sound Effect host Gabriel Spitzer.
Today we're telling stories of passing the torch. Marcus Harrison Green is the founder and editor-in-chief of the South Seattle Emerald. And he's also just written a new play. It's called Caucasians Anonymous. It's about treating racism as an addiction to whiteness, which comes with its own 12-step program. So how can somebody be addicted to whiteness? Well, here's how Marcus describes it.
I think whiteness is so intoxicating is because you can be ignorant to the rest of the world around you. You don't have to deal with racism, right? Unless you choose to. You don't have to question the structures in our society that put you at the forefront.
The play features five white characters talking to each other about their addictions. Marcus sat down with 88.5 Simone Alisea to talk about why he decided that white people must take up the torch of talking about racism.
Yeah, there was actually an event that I was moderating. It was a panel discussion after a showing of the film I'm Not Your Negro, which is essentially a James Baldwin documentary. And afterwards, before we could introduce the panel, a black woman stood up and fairly angry and wanted to know why, once again, there was a panel of mostly black people talking to a audience that was predominantly white about racism. She said, there needs to be white people talking to other white people about racism. And so that really sort of struck a chord with me. She ended up storming out.
Right. So I think that kind of brings me to the thrust of this. People of color already talk about race. They already talk about whiteness to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. But why do you think that people of color need to pass the torch on this conversation?
I think it is important that those who are the dominant within the society talk to others who are dominant in the society. To be quite frank with you, I think people of color can only do so much, but they hit a ceiling often in terms of their influence and effects and impact when they talk about race.
Yeah, so that kind of brings us to the play itself and, mm-hmm. you know, the path that you have taken in depicting how a torch might be passed, and that's this 12-step program, right. Caucasians Anonymous. You know, in what ways could a 12-step program help combat racism?
I think that the great thing about, the analogy with the 12-step program is it's realizing that this is work that consistently needs to be done. You don't go to one, you know, quote-unquote anti-racist training, or someone who's an alcoholic doesn't go to one AA meeting and then all of a sudden they're cured. Whether it's Narcotics Anonymous or Alcoholics Anonymous, you continue to come back, to continue to do the work. It's a realization that, you know, we can all slip back into bad habits. We can all slip back into our mindset.
Well, let's hear what that mindset can sound like. This is a little bit from the play where a character, Emily, is describing what brings her to Caucasians Anonymous. Emily is a teacher, and she's been sent here by the school district for touching one of her black students' hair.
It doesn't matter that I don't have a racist bone in my body, and apparently 2 years in the Peace Corps in Ghana doesn't mean anything, or the black friends I have, or being a card-carrying Democrat. Because, you know, you say something about a student's hair in class, I'm not sure when curiosity turned detrimental. I asked to touch her hair because I was curious about it, and she had these beautiful dreadlocks, and then she begins to throw a fit, calling it a microaggression.
Honestly, I think that's sort of I think that's a good example of what I call boutique liberalism. And I think that runs very rampant in Seattle. And I think when I say boutique liberalism, I sort of define that as this, you know, colorblind, you know, let's say all the right things. But then when it comes to actions, it's a bit harder to do.
We also have with us Marilee Jolin, who's the executive director of the South Seattle Emerald. You also played another character in this play, Marion, a white woman who's in a interracial relationship. Marilee, has this play and your experience in it made you want to pick up the torch in talking about race?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That's a great phrase, I think, too, picking up the torch. You know, in the sense of handing it off to others, definitely. It's been, for me, that's been an ongoing process. So much of, at least for my family, the intoxication of whiteness has been never communicating about it with each other. But for me, that's mostly where that torch passing has been, is looking closer to home, looking in my own family, in my own relationships, and being willing to start conversations that are frightening but are really necessary.
Can you give me an example of one of those frightening conversations?
Sure. I found myself in January, I found myself in New Year's at a family vacation and really didn't mean to. I really thought I was just sitting down to watch football, but it turned out that we were going to discuss the new youth jail.
And for our listeners who may not be familiar, this is the new juvenile detention facility the county wants to build in Seattle. Voters, I think, approved the funds for it several years ago, but activists oppose it because kids of color are more likely to be incarcerated.
Yeah, the basic distinctions were that I think for a lot of white folks, because the system has never harmed us, because the system was created to benefit us, it can be challenging for white people to see the system as anything but an opportunity for individuals to improve. So something like juvenile detention, I was receiving a lot of input from my family about like, well, why can't this just be a turnaround point? Like, here's how it has done good. Here's how I've seen it do good for other people in my life that were going down a wrong path. And then they went to juvie and then it improved. It felt like a really good start.
The conversation.
We started, we talked about some things and it has led to other opportunities. And I think that's maybe the most that I can ask of myself, or that any of us should be asking of ourselves, is to show up, make an effort, do it, and come back. Like, see those as long-term relationships that we are gonna continue to show up for, not like a one and done, right? Not like a come in and drop my 5-point essay and can change minds and then move on. You know, that's a very individual, very white culture way of being, as opposed to thinking about, these are my people. They will always be my people, and I'm going to continue to show up in these relationships with this torch, right. As much as needed.
Yeah, I mean, and just to follow up on that, I mean, I think Merrily perfectly, you know, summed up why it is important for white folks to continue to talk to other white folks, because that's who they see, that's who they're in relationship with. That's, you know, it should be noted again that the reason that I wrote this play is really because I was challenged to stop talking about racism as a black person, and I was challenged to have to provoke white folks into talking about racism with each other. A friend of mine who's also a writer, she talked about how she was just done talking about racism, especially after the Charlene Lyles killing that happened recently here in Seattle. She said, how many more times do I have to say something, rage on Facebook, post something on Twitter, write something, and it's just not going to change? She said, I'm at my wit's end, I'm exhausted. And I'm done and tired and I just can't do it anymore. And somebody else has to pick up the torch. And I mean, like you said, and this is a point where I think we're handing the gauntlet off to quote unquote woke white folks who really want to do this work.
That's Marcus Harrison Green and Merrily Jolin talking with 88.5's Simone Alisea.